Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Seth Godin. Seth is a 19-time best-selling author, a blogger, an internet pioneer, and a teacher. You can find out more at seths.blog. And I also just put in a quick plug. We'll talk about it later. Seth has a fantastic podcast called Akimbo, and we'll talk about that a little later. How are you, Seth?
I'm fantastic. On a good day, I try my best to be a little like each of you.
Well, you're very good at the flattery, and thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to hear your wisdom.
Well, we got tons. So I gave you more links than you asked for, so we'll do it.
I know. Yeah, that's so great. People can't see it, but we have a long list of really great tools from Seth, and I hope we get to them all.
Yeah, well, let's try to go through them quickly so we can get all of them, because I looked at them, and I think we should try to squeak them all in the time that we have. So tell us about the LaserBond 100 for the Glowforge laser cutter.
Okay, so the Glowforge was a sensation on Kickstarter, and unlike many Kickstarter sensations, it actually works. And it's a device that goes back and forth like a CAD-CAM flatbed printer, except it's got a high-powered laser in it that can cut through wood or acrylic or maybe chocolate. I haven't tried chocolate. And I have been bad at it for a long time, and I'm getting better. And they put up a sign in my building in the lobby, and I don't like the sign. So I made a new one, and I ended up making 18 versions to get it to look professional. And the key, which is talked about a little bit on the very active Glowforge discussion board, is this new product called LaserBond 100. And it's this weird hack, which is this. Laser cutters of this sort can't cut through metal, but they can heat it up. So if you spray a certain kind of lubricant on the metal, when it heats up, it becomes impervious to everything. And then you just wash off all the other bits. And it's a super weird way to make a sign, but it works beautifully. And the reason I'm leading off with it is almost no one who doesn't have one of these things cares at all about this. But here's a guy who just went out of his way to make a cool tool for the people who need it. And I thought that's exactly what we're looking for.
So I can understand this. This is you're taking metal and you're making a sign or some letters or drawings or some kind of mark on the metal, and you do that with the laser.
Right, except the metal, the laser is not strong enough to do a lot of damage to the metal. So instead, you put on something that's a little bit like graphite. It's just was designed as a lubricant. And when the lubricant gets hot, magically, it turns into this paper-thin, bonded blackness on your metal, and then you wash off all the part that didn't get hot, and it looks really sharp.
So it's almost like the concept behind like toner on a laser printer.
Exactly.
The laser bonds the toner in. Yeah, I'm looking at examples. It's really cool. Yeah, I know like people etched the top of their laptops, like the aluminum on a PowerBook, but it's just kind of aluminum that's a little different, right? Reflection or something. This would actually burn in a really nice black image into the surface. Super cool.
Except, do you know whether it is sort of durable?
It's unbelievably durable. It's like if you want to get it off, you can't.
Okay. Great. So you could mark up your laptop that way.
I'm not a doctor, nor am I someone who's going to tell you how to laser cut your expensive device. But yes, there are people who have done this on their laptops.
Okay, fantastic.
That's really cool. And I'll just say, it looks like a can of regular old spray paint, but you're going to pay $70 for it.
Right, but it goes a long way, particularly if you're getting your sign approved for the building lobby.
That's so cool. I love that. And I have a Glowforge, which I love so much. And so this looks like a perfect thing to get for it. So you want to talk about canoe plans.
Yeah. All right. So
you're building a boat in your garage?
Well, I'm imagining that I'm going to build a boat in my garage. Imagining is way better than actually doing it. So here's the quick background. In 1955, there were more canoes in Canada than automobiles. It was the number one form of transportation for the whole country. And the canoes were mostly cedar strip canoes. A cedar strip canoe is made from very thin strips of cedar on top of wooden ribs, just like the ribs in a human being's lung that hold your lungs together. And then you can either put fiberglass or even more elegantly canvas on this boat. And the company that made most of them was the Chestnut Canoe Company. And I know this because I learned how to style canoe from the student of the person who invented the sport in the 1930s. I once paddled with him, and I've taught thousands of people in Canada how to canoe. But even though I make my own canoe paddles, I've never made my own canoe. Well, the Chestnut Canoe Company, the pioneer, long out of business, and I've always been fascinated by how you just take basically 40 pounds of cedar strip scraps and make it into a boat. Well, there's this guy, I don't actually have his name handy, who has built a website where he sells you a tube with plans in it. That's all you get is a printout. And what I love about it is it's as if he has the ethos of a $50,000 motorcycle manufacturer, that it's got a style to it. It's not just here's the minimum, it's here's the maximum. Here's the Rococo Baroque version of a set of plans to make this timeless boat. And it is entirely possible I will never make the boat because I got almost 106% of the satisfaction just by knowing that I could.
Yes.
So Seth, if you do decide to make it, does it also include like the actual materials you need to buy?
Yeah, it comes with a shopping list. And what you have to do, surprisingly, is buy the biggest pieces of wood you will discard when you are done. And that is to make the mold that you're going to wrap the whole thing around.
Yeah, it's a two-step thing. First, you make the mold, then you build it around it, and then you throw the mold away. And I've seen people make these. It's something that you can kind of work incrementally towards, where you lap by lap, strip by strip, you add them up, and the skill required to do that is not great. It's more of a marathon skill.
Right.
Of sticking with it and doing it over and over again. That is the big hurdle. Mm-hmm. I don't know about these plans, but in general, the strip canoe plans are entirely something doable for somebody who has never made a boat.
And here's something that's interesting. This website, you can get a paddle template for free if you want. You can download it. So that might be an interesting way to get started in this.
Right.
World.
And that's how I actually found them, because my goal is to cut my next paddle on the Glowforge. The problem is the Glowforge can't take a piece of cherry wood that's 3/4 inch thick. And so I would have to make it with pieces of veneer and then glue them up. But it's on the agenda because my paddles are beautiful, but finding 3/4 inch cherry is getting harder and harder.
And it sounds like you have the kind of Glowforge where you can feed an infinitely long piece through.
Right, but first you have to find an infinitely long piece.
Piece of cherry, yeah.
3/4 inch cherry.
Yeah, well, good luck finding that.
That's really great. And the name of these plans are called what's
Ashes Stillwaterboats.com.
Okay, Ashes Stillwater Boats. Okay. Great idea. So you have another one on your list for us to kind of go through. And this is
a tip. And like most people with tips, and I will put the two of you in that category, when we encounter people who should know the tip and don't know the tip, we are enraged beyond words. So here's one of the biggest shifts of the last 5 years is that more and more people are realizing you don't need to get on an airplane. You can just do a video call. And just before this, I was on a video call with 60 people, but you can do a video call with 2 people. And if you flew across the country and showed up at a meeting looking like you had just eaten pizza and then slept in it, people would laugh at you. But people show up like that in Zoom calls all the time. And so I wrote a blog post called How to Be on a Zoom Call. And basically what I describe is where to put the light, where to put the microphone, what to wear. Don't have a conversation in the middle. Because unlike a conference call, which you can put on mute, it's really hard to put a video call on mute talking to other people because everyone can see you. And so if I've added sanity to anyone's life with these 6 or 8 points, I hope that it was worth the free click.
That's good. And we'll have a link to those. I do Zoom every single day. So, and some of these I actually don't pay attention to. Like the first one, sit close to the screen. Your face should fill most of it. I actually don't do that.
Why?
Just because my monitor is farther back on my desk than it should be. And I could easily move it closer.
All right. So we've already converted one person.
Yeah. And I realize now, Kevin, when you and I do a hangout, you do have your face close.
Yeah, I'm pretty close. I like to be present.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, I'm going to start doing that from now on and see how that works out.
And I also use a headset and microphone as I am right now. And when I'm not talking, hit mute. I'm maybe not as good about that as I should be. I definitely don't eat during the meeting.
That's good. So, yeah, there's so many here. Let's go to the next one. Paul McGowan's speaker journey.
Okay, so there's a guy named Paul in Boulder, Colorado, and he makes all the little pieces or some big pieces for expensive stereos, like preamps and amps and power conditioners and stuff like that. Started from a little tiny company. And what I like about this story is it's a maker's story because he has succeeded at doing it. But he made a friendship years ago with a guy named Arnie Nudell. And Arnie built the biggest speaker that was for sale in the history of the country. 4 boxes, bigger each one than a casket. So if you bring these 4 boxes home, you're going to need a casket because your spouse is going to kick you out. But leaving that aside, most people believe that Arnie's speakers were some of the greatest ever made. Well, Paul hooked up with Arnie toward the end of his life, and they started talking about what would it be like to use modern technology to make that again. And unfortunately, Arnie died about 9 months ago. And in his memory, Paul is persisting in making the speaker. What's really cool about it is for a year, he's been sharing everything he's been doing, talking about it. Halfway through, they abandoned the plans and started over in a different direction. And he's doing it in front of all of his customers. And he hasn't taken any orders. It's not an Instagram ploy. I mean, a Kickstarter ploy. It's just, here's a guy who likes being a maker. And I've been thrilled to watch it. He just demoed the prototype 2 weeks ago. And you can see some of the posts that he's put up as it's unfolded. And it takes real guts, I think, to be this sort of maker.
So one of the, I'm not an audiophile by any measure. I seem to actually like the sound of CDs. But I understand that there's sort of a level of highfalutin BS in parts of this realm. How are you comfortable that, and how do you know that this is sort of not part of that kind of monster cables and things where there's kind of a status to them that isn't really warranted? Well, how do you subtract that out?
There's a technical term for highfalutin BS. And the technical term is the placebo effect. And the placebo effect is your greatest bargain. There are no side effects. You can't overdose. It works great every time. And is there a placebo effect in stereo equipment? There's no doubt about it. But if for $400, you can buy something that for the next 4,000 hours of listening makes you think your stereo sounds better, that seems like a bargain to me. And NPR did a post where they posted the same music with 6 different formats, from MP3 low res all the way up to super high res, better than CD. And you could listen to the 6 and make a guess as to which one was which. And so this is a classic double blind study. And I got all six right.
Wow.
So I believe that at some level, if you train yourself, you actually can hear better, just like I think the first time wine drinker probably isn't as good at it as the 100th time wine drinker. And what I know is that, like, so the amps I have in my stereo were made by a guy named Ken Shindo. He just passed away. They're made from tubes by hand in Japan. There's a huge amount of placebo in these $3,000 amplifiers. No question about it, but they still sound great. And I can tell the difference between them and, you know, the solid state thing you buy down at Best Buy. Can I tell $3,000 worth of difference with my eyes closed? I don't think so, but that's okay because I'm not spending the money doing something else.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So this guy, Paul, is in the process. So what you're doing is we're watching him think out loud, make out loud. We're watching the entire process of dead ends, restarts, of someone being creative and trying to make something world class.
Exactly. And he's doing it in honor and memory of a late friend, and he's using tech all at the same time.
Great. Fantastic. So what's next on your list?
All right, we got two more. We're on a roll. Great. Oh, we got more than two more. All right, here we go. The next one is there's a machine in Switzerland that you can get called a PacoJet, and they use it in restaurants. You probably have never seen one. It's a little bigger than a sewing machine, and in it is a blade that spins in a vacuum at about 10,000 RPM, which is wicked fast. And it comes with a half a dozen metal aluminum canisters that you fill with a homemade ice cream mix. In my case, I make a vegan one with four kinds of nuts, dates, and cocoa powder. And you freeze it to 4 degrees below zero. Then you put the canister into the PacoJet and tell it how many servings of ice cream you want. And you press a button and it spins down at super high speed and spins off as many servings as your restaurant needs. And it is the best ice cream technology in the world. It's using a totally different way to break up ice crystals to make deliciousness. And if you care a lot about homemade ice cream, this is the thing to get.
Is it kind of like soft serve ice cream, or is it more your classic, you know, hard ice cream, we'll call it?
It's pretty soft because I don't add stabilizers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you add stabilizers, no problem. And then if it's still too soft, you put it back in the freezer for 15 minutes and then you can scoop it.
Uh-huh. But I mean, is it like soft serve? Is it the kind of what we would call soft serve where it's
it is closer to a custard than it is to a hard scoop.
Do you actually have one of these, Seth?
Yes, I bought it on eBay. And I've used it more than 800 times so far.
So that means about $5 per use.
Well, no, because I didn't buy it new. I bought it for less than half price. So I'm down to $2.50 per use.
So because I'm looking at a new one is in the neighborhood of like 6,000, 7,000. Then you can get some used.
You know those Swiss, they keep raising the price. But the used ones you can get if you look for like $1,900, $2,400.
That's still a lot, but
it's a ridiculous amount.
If you use it a lot, then it's...
But you're saying that the main use is actually in restaurants who are, I guess, have a very particular recipe for a flavor or whatever, and they're going to serve their guests with this homemade ice cream.
Well, so at a restaurant, you can have 20 different flavors in the deep freeze.
Right, right.
Someone orders one scoop, no problem.
Right. You just make it right then. So it's freshly made. Wow.
Exactly.
And so this blade is like chopping mixing everything up. Is that what it's doing? Or?
Well, I think
it looks like a blender blade.
It comes down from the top. And it pulls a vacuum. So mm-hmm. It's actually, there's no air inside after it pulls the vacuum. And as it spins top down, I think what it's doing is shaving the ice off. Mm-hmm. And it does it so aggressively that there are no crystals left.
Huh. I wonder why the vacuum is important.
I think turbulence.
Oh. Okay. Interesting. Or just to keep air from mixing into it.
Maybe they should do it without gravity too. That might be better.
Exactly.
Okay, so the PacoJet.
All right, now we got a cheaper one now coming up for Kevin.
Okay.
And so the next one you have is some kind of air filter.
This thing is such a breakthrough. All right. So you know that thing over your stove that mm-hmm. you press the fan
yeah.
and it goes, so when you're making something smoky,
right.
do you know where the smoke goes when you press that button?
Well, it depends. Sometimes they recirculate into the room, which is crazy.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
The real ones should exit out of your roof.
Right. Go they ahead. Should, yeah. but they don't.
Right.
And so in my office, I make lunch for everyone every day. And dosas are big on the menu, and dosas make wow. a little bit of smoke. And this was a problem. It turns out this machine, which is basically a tennis ball can, but three times as wide, you put it next to your stove and you press a button and all the smoke disappears. That's all it does.
And where does the smoke go?
Well, it's got a carbon something filter inside okay. that is good for many, many hours. But I only use it for 5 minutes at a time, so I haven't used it up. I have one next to my Glowforge. I have one next
Are
to my
Are you
stove.
Using this in lieu of a hose going out the window for your Glowforge?
No, or I have both.
Okay. Yeah, because both. Even when you use those, that you still get that burned like campfire smell in the house.
Right. And for $89, it's the problem goes away. It's like right, why right. doesn't every house have That's one next cool. to their stove?
Uh-huh.
I don't understand.
And so the way this works is it's just passing the air through the charcoal or whatever the filter is, and then it's exiting the air out. So it's
right.
It's right. And so it kind of depends on how efficient this air mover, the blade, the fan is inside. It must
well,
be very
also,
efficient.
Unlike the thing over your stove, they put some thought into how to construct the filter. Mm-hmm. You can put it much closer to where the smoke is coming from.
I get it. Well, that's right. So it's a portable one. That's the yeah. key thing then.
Right. There's no venting required, and it's right. sort of attractive.
Right. It looks like a white Amazon mm-hmm. Alexa
yeah.
device, where they're called.
Kind of a Dieter Rams look there with the – that's a great one. And like you said, the price is pretty surprising.
Does it work on batteries, or does it have to be plugged in?
You have to plug it in.
Okay.
That looks really cool. That's a good one. Thanks, Seth. I'm getting one of those. Okay. So on the topic of making dosas.
And so we should explain to listeners, for those who are not familiar, a dosa is sort of like an Indian crepe, usually larger, and they can have all kinds of things folded inside them.
Right. And they're made from two ingredients, rice and lentils. So if you're a vegan or a vegetarian, it's a home run. They're delicious. You make them on a big cast iron skillet with no sides. But it turns out that the super popular brand new copper mats that are a miracle for cooking fish on the grill, you can also just dump the dosa batter right onto the copper mat and you can grill your dosa.
So I don't know. I haven't heard about this copper mat. Thing.
Oh, you don't know about copper mat?
Oh, they're great. I have one too, Seth. But yeah, tell us, that they're wonderful.
I got some copper mats for Dan Pink. I'm now a hero in his home. So these copper mats cost $1 each on Amazon. It is the size of a small cooking sheet. They're flexible and they're just woven copper. And what you do is you put them on the grill, you warm them up for just a minute, and then nothing you put on them will stick. You can cook fish, huh. anything. And it's a miracle. Like,
wow.
Why did they just get invented now? It is, if this was on late night TV, you would say, that's impossible.
Yeah, I imagine like the ShamWow guy talking these things and not believing him.
Right. They're unbelievable. And they last for mm-hmm. months.
Yeah, they do.
Why don't they last forever?
Well, because things get caramelized on them. And as you okay. start to clean them aggressively, some of the copper... because it's a mat, it's going to start to fade. And after a while, you just look at it and say, wouldn't I rather just pay another dollar and recycle this piece of copper? So you do.
Yeah. In my experience, though, I have had some that have lasted over a year. I mean, they are quite durable.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like a silicone mat that is for baking. This is for grilling.
Right, but the only thing that's similar is its appearance. But in fact, it works completely differently because it lets heat and smoke through it.
Okay.
Yeah, I when I got it, I thought this will like incinerate the second I set it on my charcoal grill. That's how like flimsy they are. They're so thin. It's amazing.
And it doesn't have to be over a grill. Could you put them on a like a grill, like a flat grill, like on a stove?
I think you can put them anywhere. And I'm thinking, because this is such a successful one, we should move it to the top of the show so that if people got confused by the canoes, they at least won't miss the copper mat thing.
It's a good one.
And so they're about like a sheet of paper or larger?
They're two sheets. They're a tabloid sheet of paper.
Okay, tabloids. All right. That's great. And are there more than one variety?
Oh, yeah. This is Amazon. So as soon as someone starts to succeed, there's right. 400 copies with fake reviews.
Does it matter?
Not in my, I've bought three different kinds so far as gifts and no one has complained yet. So I don't know.
Okay. Copper grill mats. It's a thing which I didn't know about. Thank you, Seth. I am now clued in. I'm now part of that church.
Yeah, Kevin, you'll like these. So Seth, the next thing you have is, well, just tell us what it is because I've never heard of it.
So if you want to make the batter for dosa, because you can get it at the Indian market, but you should make it at least once. You first have to move to South India. and then you get the two ingredients, and they have to each be soaked separately. And then you have to grind them in what's called a wet grinder, which are a granite flat surface that's round, and then these conical granite pyramids that spin around and grind things to a very small size. The reason you have to move to South India is after you've made the batter, you have to plunge your hands into it repeatedly. That is how you inoculate it with whichever sort of bacteria makes it ferment. Now, I did not make my batter in South India, so my inoculation isn't quite as successful, but you can't skip the part about infecting it with the bacteria. But leaving that aside, a wet grinder is a miracle. You can make hummus in it. You can make chocolate from scratch, from cocoa nibs, and you can make this product. And there are lots of people who are importing them from India. And so I shared a couple. The interesting thing about the Cocoa Town link is the guy who imports it from India realized it was the cheapest way to make homemade chocolate. So he just put a sticker on the outside, calls it Cocoa Town, and he doesn't even mention dosa. You just have to pay extra because you can make chocolate in it.
Right. And is the dosa dough, or, is it like sourdough, or you actually carry forward a successful fermentation and seed the next one, or do you have to kind of re-inoculate it each time?
No, it's a good shortcut to bring it forward because it's okay. Definitely alive.
Right, right. I have to say that the masala dosa is the canonical version of the dosa and is the single thing that I yearn for and why I go to India is just to have a masala dosa. And that is sort of like the peak.
Yeah.
Culinary experience for me is a neighborhood masala dosa. It's like that is to die for.
Well, next time you're in New York, I will do my best to simulate it.
So okay. Masala, the flour is rice and some kind of a bean?
So no, the masala refers to a filling, paper dosa.
It's a filling. It's right, a filling.
A paper dosa.
But all the dosas have a similar rice-based flour.
So it's uncooked rice and uncooked white lentils.
Okay.
And you soak them and grind them.
I don't know if I've tried a dosa before.
A masala, a dosa? Oh my gosh.
Okay.
You can go to any kind of high-end Indian restaurant and they will serve you one for a lot of money.
Until I get a grinder and one of those fans or filters, I'll go to the store, give it a try.
So the next one's really short, but it's something I learned the hard way, which is closed captioning. People are familiar with it. It's those words on the screen. And if you're making video now, you can choose for $1 a minute to close caption your videos. And that way, anyone who is in a place where hearing is difficult for them or just doesn't want to turn on the audio can press a button and see closed captioning. And the site I use to get it done is rev.com. They assure me they are not using computers. I think they are. They say they just have very good humans who do it. I don't care. It's $1 a minute. It gets done super, super, super fast. But then here's the cool part. If you've uploaded your video to Vimeo, they just automatically link it to Vimeo and it just magically happens. So you just tell them which videos and then they're closed captioned. But this is different than open captioning. Open captioning is when the captions are there and you cannot turn them off. And the thing that is astonishing to me is that Instagram and Facebook do not have this feature built in, because lots of people of many generations who use those sites need it to be captioned because they don't listen, right? They're doing it at work or whatever. And to open caption a site is a pain in the neck because you have to close caption it, then download the SRT caption file, upload the thing to Final Cut Pro, burn it in, and then upload it back to Vimeo. It should all be in one step. It's not. Open captioning is a pain in the neck, but now you know how to do it.
So so we use Rev to do transcripts for this podcast. I didn't realize that you have to do your own closed captioning file. I thought that somehow YouTube did it, but I hadn't
realized YouTube does
that.
It automatically now, but okay. Vimeo does not.
All right. So, when YouTube is doing it, it is closed captions in the sense that it's an option.
The viewer has to press the option, and it is 100% right. Computer done. The quality is amazing, right. But still pretty right. Bad.
So you do have an option if you wanted to do your own closed captions for YouTube, is you could submit a separate file, and that would override the automatic one.
I think that's true. Most people who are trying to do their video work professionally are putting it on Vimeo because you don't have to deal with the ads and stuff. But yes, I think that's how it works on YouTube. But the key is, if you're putting stuff on Insta and Facebook and you want people to engage with it, you really need to open caption it, because they do not have a setting that just automatically turns on the closed captioning for people.
Okay. All right. So you're advocating that for Instagram, Facebook, that when you have video that you have open caption, which means that the captions are always
right.
There.
It's less artistic, right? But if you're trying to communicate right. To people who are likely to swipe away,
sure.
You really need to do it.
And I lost track of what you were saying, that the Rev, you can link from Rev directly to the Vimeo. What was, could you run that by me again?
Right. So when I go to get my captions done, Rev says, do you have a Vimeo account? I say, yes. It says, here are all the Vimeos we can find from you that don't have captions. Which ones do you want us to caption for you? I click three buttons. I say, go. $7 later, they all have captions automatically added. I don't have to go get the file. I don't have to touch the file. It just happens.
That's really cool. So Seth, we're kind of running out of time here. I wanted to make sure that we talk a little bit about your crazy plan to change the way that learning for adults is done.
Well, that's kind of you. So my day job, the thing I'm spending all my time on now, is learning, not education. No certificate, no degree, no accreditation, no tests. Show up because you want to learn something. And it's in the spirit of what I learned from Kevin all the way back to Whole Earth, which is that if you're enrolled in learning something, it doesn't need to be sugar-coated the same way. And you are open to experience, which makes you open to change. So at akimbo.com, that is what we are building, one series of workshops after another, where people work with each other, face-to-face on video or in discourse, around small lessons over months of time, where at the end, they are transformed in the way they see the world, and they don't care that they didn't get a certificate.
What kinds of things, just as an example, are people using this already for to learn?
So our biggest one, 8,000 people so far, is the marketing seminar. That's partly because I have a credential to teach that one. And so we've taught bootstrapping and podcasting, freelancing, and the business of food, which we did with a professor at UC Berkeley. And I keep trying to explore the overlap between things that can be taught in this way and things that people are willing to learn. And they have to overlap or it doesn't make sense. So there are lots of things I could teach this way, but no one would sign up and pay to take it. And the other thing we found that's interesting is if people don't pay, because we give charities free slots all the time, they drop out. That it turns out it matters that you paid to buy that ticket to the movie theater. If you hadn't, you would have walked out of 2001 back in 1969. But you said to yourself, well, I paid for the ticket, so I might as well stay.
I believe that. That makes good sense.
And what and just curiously, do you have a set fee, or does the fee depend on what's being taught? What's the cost?
So it varies. The cheapest one we've done is $195, mm-hmm. and the Alt MBA, which is our flagship and has a lot of coaching and much more intense from our point of view, is about $4,500. So it's 1/10 the price of a university and 100 times as much as learning from Udemy. So it's right between the two.
Cool. And is this like kind of like a, you mentioned people teaching each other. So is this kind of like a template, like an open source thing where you are encouraging others to kind of adopt this? Or is this more of you're just encouraging as many people to come through this platform as possible?
Well, so the platform we built is on an open source piece of software called Discourse. And again, learning from both of you, what I've tried to do is say, here's something I'm doing that's working. Please steal it from me, copy it in any way you want, because we need more of it. But if you want my version of it, here it is. So the concepts are all in the world. And in terms of learning from each other, so what I'll do is I'll post a 5-minute lesson, lesson number 7, but then people will spend the next week in groups and teams working through those 7 minutes around their issues, around what they're trying to build. And so whereas education is teacher-focused, this is learning, so it's student-focused. You come with your thing. I want to make a podcast about blank. Well, here's 30 steps. And because by the time you're done with these 30 steps, you will have a podcast and it will be working.
Cool. That's fantastic. Oh, as usual, it's brilliant, Seth. I really applaud that, and I'll have to give it a try. I'm sure somewhere in there is something that I do want to learn, and I'd like to give it a try. So thanks.
Thank you both. I love this show. I'm so privileged to be a 3-time guest. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Seth.